You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, one of the things that strikes me is that we're always waiting for something. We're waiting for the US Federal Reserve decision on US monetary policy this evening. We're waiting for all sorts of different big tech earnings coming out this week. But what I've really focused on this week, in my mind anyway, is the news out of really big companies like Starbucks and McDonald's and Domino's Pizza, which are all reporting a slowdown in sales because of the so-called cost of living crisis. And I wonder if that's happening in South Africa as well. And I'm sure it must be. If it's happening worldwide, it must be happening in South Africa.
Yeah, but look, it hasn't. The US completely against what I initially thought. I thought when interest rates went up that it would actually go into a recession.
Yes.
Because that's what's happened previously. And I know we're coming off an incredibly low base, but when you take, let's just say the long bond was 1%, it's now 4%.
Right.
You know, that's a 300% increase in the long-term cost of money.
Yes.
Now, I know the U.S. has got their mortgage bonds have got, you know, fixed interest rates for certain periods, so you don't pay that initially. But I would have, and I did, I would have sworn blind that you would go into a recession. They haven't. But such a hike in interest rates, there is no ways that the economy eventually must take some strain. And maybe that's what we're seeing now, is that eventually it's starting to take a little bit of strain, and hence the interest rate decision. Whether it's tonight or not, I don't know, but it's coming.
You think so?
Yes.
When they see,
and it's coming quite soon.
The US Federal Reserve must have dozens and dozens of different metrics that they analyze,
yes,
before making a decision. But results from companies like Domino's, like McDonald's, like Starbucks must be taken into account, I think.
Correct, yes. And I think they look at many, many things. Remember, they're still just trying to guess the future.
Yes.
But they look at many, many things. And this will be part of what they look at, and they'll look at leading indicators and all of those things as well to determine the underlying state of the economy, but more importantly, the underlying state of inflation. And if consumer expenditure is starting to slow down, then inflation will also eventually slow down. And we're also seeing the oil price falling a little bit. That all helps. So I think we will get a rate cut, whether it's today or not. Who actually knows, but I think we are getting a rate cut, and I think we'll get one either this meeting or the next meeting.
Which is September, isn't it? I think September is the next one.
Yeah. And I think that on the back of that, we'll cut our rates in September as well.
It would be quite nice if they surprised us this evening and said, there's a cut. We've looked at the data.
Yes.
Inflation has come down to a reasonable level, and we're seeing signs of strain in the economy at the consumer level and at the corporate level, etc. So let's cut now. Let's not get behind the curve, which is a horrible phrase, yeah, but that's what they might say. There's an outside chance they might do that.
There is. I mean, just on that saying behind the curve, they're always behind the curve because they only react to data.
Yeah.
They don't anticipate data, they react to data. Now, inflation in the US comes out next week, I think, and the jobs data comes out Friday. So they may not do it this meeting. I mean, it's not impossible, but I don't think so. They'll wait for the next one in 2 months' time.
Yeah, they're far too cautious, these people. If you were the chair of the U.S. Federal Reserve, what would you do now? I mean, obviously, you're a fund manager, and you would have your fund management hat on. But, I mean, plausibly, would you say that, yeah, we should cut now because things are starting to turn and we don't want them to turn really badly?
I personally would cut, but then I'm far more probably too dovish to be on any reserve bank anywhere because, you know, I would always raise rates too late and cut them too soon.
Mm.
But I would cut rates because everyone knows they're coming. I mean, everyone knows interest rate cuts are coming. Everyone knows the state of the economy is slowing down. Everyone knows inflation is slowing down. Everyone knows the wage growth in the labor data number is slowing down. So it's all just a question of when, really. And a two-month, a quarter percent cut 2 months too early surely won't make such a dramatic difference to the eventual outcome. You know, a quarter percent cut 2 months earlier than what you might have liked to do it is not going to send inflation through the roof.
No, of course not, especially when demand is low.
And it's interesting, as you said, when you look especially at McDonald's, I mean, those were bad numbers, eh?
Well, they overpriced themselves compared to their competition, which is a fatal error. I mean, if you've got a choice of Burger King, Taco Bell in the United States, Taco Bell, McDonald's and Domino's Pizza, and one is a dollar higher for a meal for your family per person than the other one, it's not difficult to make the choice.
No, it's not a difficult decision, yeah. Mm. And I must admit, I personally do not like McDonald's hamburgers. To me, they are tasteless. I like Burger King and Spur. To me, a McDonald's hamburger, the meat doesn't taste like meat, but we're getting off the subject now.
No, we're not. No, I want you to stay on the subject because when I spoke to Shapiro on Monday, as I always do, we were talking about McDonald's and we were talking about the results. And I asked him when he last had a McDonald's and said he couldn't remember, but he likes their fries, he said. And I told him
the fries are good.
Yeah, they are very nice. They're little thin things.
Fries are very nice.
Reconstituted potatoes made into little sticks, and they're very nice.
In the old days when you used to go into a studio to do your radio interview, my special treat on a Friday is to go through to the Moneyweb studio, and I used to stop at McDonald's and buy a small packet of fries and some tomato sauce and then vanilla milkshake and sit in my car and drink my medium size, not large size, vanilla milkshake and my small packet of fries with some tomato sauce from Mackey D's, and it was absolutely delicious.
Well,
their little breakfast bun that they do, that's not bad.
Well, I can tell you two stories now. The first McDonald's to open in the United Kingdom, in England, was in a place called Slough, which was made famous by Ricky Gervais's brilliant series called The Office. But anyway, I queued up there the first day it opened in order to get the McDonald's, because McDonald's was legendary.
Yeah.
And it was a big thing. It was like a spaceship landing in Britain and opening up. So I went there, and the first meal I ever had was Big Mac, large fries, vanilla shake. Large vanilla shake, because I was a youngster, obviously. And it's always been my go-to meal ever since then. And I had one a couple of weeks ago because, I don't know, I just felt hungry and there was something flashed up on my phone to say you got a special at McDonald's. So I ordered it. It was horrible. I was up all night. I couldn't digest it.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, but look, you're talking about that spaceship landing in England when the first Burger King landed here in South Africa. It was in Sandton, just sort of near the Discovery Building.
Burger King or McDonald's are you talking about now?
No, Burger King. No, Burger King.
All right.
When they opened up, I was trying to get to a studio to do TV in Rosebank.
Yeah.
And the road, which is Rivonia Road, was impassable.
Okay.
The people had double parked and triple parked in the street to queue. I actually got to TV late because the road was impassable. People literally had parked their cars, docked the whole road, and we're standing in a queue a mile long. Whether they eventually got something or not, I don't know. But Burger King's nice. I actually had Burger King this weekend at a double cheese. It was very tasty.
Did you have the Whopper or not? No, the double cheese.
No, I had a double cheese.
Okay. That's gone under now, hasn't it? What was it owned by?
Who was that? That company,
the company that's
sold
listed,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the names, I'll think of it now.
Yeah.
They had lots of gambling interests and very big in the Muslim community. They had lots of gambling interests. And then they sold some of that and they went into Dunkin' Donuts.
And Burger King.
And Burger King and one other one, some ice cream.
Baskin-Robbins, I think it was.
Baskin-Robbins ice cream. Yeah. Well, the Baskin-Robbins are all closed. The Dunkin' Donuts are all closed. And the Burger King, the number of outlets have halved, if not more.
Mm.
What was that?
What was the name of the company? It's a very small company listed on the JSC, and I can't for the life of me think of it. You just do that while I look at the prices, because I'm going to ask you that after you've worked out who owns or owned Burger King, because the all share indices and the resources index going through the roof. It must be ecstatic. Also, the industrials and the financials doing so well.
Mm. I mean, the all share index is actually at a record high.
Look at that, 82,594 on my delayed screen. So, yes, it is an all-time record high. That's amazing.
It's a record high, yeah.
And the Rand is it's stable at 18.
The Rand's behaving itself.
Yeah. Brimstone, wasn't it Brimstone that owned that?
Wasn't Brimstone. No, it wasn't. Ah, man, my memory is so poor. All the details of the whole company, I just can't remember its name. Or was it Brimstone?
I think it was Brimstone. I think it was, because they were. I interviewed, as you say, it's a Muslim-owned company. Very nice people that I used to interview. And gosh, I'm looking it up now. I'm cheating because I'm not Googling it. I'm Binging it, apparently, because I'm not allowed to have Google. Burger Me South Africa.
It doesn't say what it does, yeah.
Anyway, the point is, you would prefer a Burger King to a McDonald's.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. The Whopper is amazing. Anyway, it doesn't. Who owns Burger King? Emerging Capital Partners. It's a PE-based private equity firm, but that doesn't adequately describe.
I don't think it's Brimstone. It's another name. I don't think it's Brimstone. Okay. Brimstone's Fisheries, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Right. Sure, you got me completely puzzled there now.
Well, it's also going
to be,
when you get to our age.
I'm sure Shapiro will know.
Ah, please, he knows everything.
Because he knows everything, mate.
He's very smug.
Yeah, he is actually quite smug about his knowledge base.
We're really going off on a tangent now. I really don't care who owns Burger King suddenly. But, Wayne, we've got the U.S. Federal Reserve.
The all shares absolutely flying, as we spoke about earlier on. Mm. And I think industrials might also be at a record high. We know the financials have done extremely well.
Yes.
But, of course, the mining shares, if they're turning, you know, they're only just starting to turn.
But why is this? Can you give me an adequate explanation as to why it's happening ahead of a U.S. Federal Reserve monetary policy decision? Is it a local story? As someone from overseas suddenly said, right, we like South Africa, let's put a few billion into the market. What is it?
No, there's no local story that I know of. I mean, I'm just having a look here at the resource index. Mm. Now, this includes gold, and we know gold has shot the lights out.
Yes.
You know, the resource index, the previous time we had was about 82,000, well, actually higher than that, probably 86,000. And it hit a bottom at 50,000. It's only now just gone through 60,000. So, you know, if this is going to run, it's got a long way still to run.
You sound bullish, Wayne.
Well, you know me, as I said, I'm probably a little bit too bullish, to be honest, for my own good. But yeah, I mean the industrial index is also effectively at an all time high or extremely close to it. Let me just look at financials here.
Yeah, they're doing well. They're up a percent, I think.
Financials. This is also a record high. Financials have given you 51% return in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but go back 10 years, and then this is what Shapiro would say to us. Go back 10 years.
Yeah. But also just Shapiro, just remember on the NASDAQ, just go back 3 years, eh?
Okay.
You know, it took a pounding.
We should have a three-way conversation.
Anyway, the financials are also at a record high. And when you look at financials, the valuations are actually quite reasonable still. I did a presentation last week, and I had to sort of update myself on everything. And when we look at the valuations of our underlying indices. Let me just get it here quickly. I've just called it up here.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually had to do some work. Oh, the couple of interesting things in this presentation. This is now before the fall. So this is at the end of last month.
Yeah.
Beginning of July. NVIDIA's market cap was bigger than France and Germany and virtually the same size as the UK. Okay, now it's 30% lower now, or 20% lower, so it's no longer in the same league, but it's now still as big as the French share market in total. I mean, people must realize that, you know, how that company's share price is run.
Is that a warning sign? Before you go on with more stats, is that a warning sign to you?
It's a warning sign for the share price, yes. I mean, the share price could fall quite a bit more, but then it would be an incredibly strong buy because there's nothing wrong with the company. Okay, just on our share market, and now this is now, it's a very simplistic way of valuing the market, but it still nevertheless gives you some insights. It just takes the average price earnings ratio for the various indices and one standard deviation on each side of that.
Mm.
And the industrials are just above their long-term mean. So it's not expensive, but they are above the long-term mean. Financials are virtually on the bottom of the standard deviation on the cheap side. And my mining shares are well below the bottom of the standard deviation line. In other words, they are still very much undervalued in relation to their long-term mean. And so is the alt share. So the alt share could still run. I mean, our internal valuation for what it's worth. Let me just get this for you quickly. Let me just call it up here.
Yeah. While you're doing that, the U.S. 10-year bond has had a really, really good day. It's now 4.10%, and it was in the 420s. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's really good. I mean, there's an anticipatory mood here that the U.S. Federal Reserve will cut rates tonight, or will say that we will cut rates in September. So
yeah, we'll give a bullish outlook.
Yeah,
our internal valuation. Now, this takes 100 companies, the biggest 100 companies, and works out what we think they're worth on a 1 and 2 year. Well, in fact, it goes for much longer than that, but we only look at it on a 1 and 2 year basis. So it's a ranking table essentially. And we think the all share in the next 2 years could go through 100,000. So in other words, another 50-odd%.
Well, if you take 25%
I did this a week ago. It's already run 5% since I've done this. When I do it tonight again, you know, it will show, you know, 15% per year. In other words, and that's just to get to fair value. That's not to get to an overvalued situation. That's just to get to what we think is fair value. And, of course, the market, as much as it can be undervalued, it can also be overvalued. So I think the outlook, look, if we get the interest rate cuts and if we get a commodity cycle revival and we get a bit of an upturn, et cetera, and if.
Mm.
You know, emerging markets, including ours, could be of the best performers in dollar terms in the world, eh? Because every other time this has happened, they have been of the best performers in dollar terms in the world. I mean, we all forget this. In the big China years, now I'm not for a moment saying the China years are going to happen again because China's already happened. You know, maybe in 10 years' time it might be the Indian years and India might have 10, 15, 20% growth rates, who knows? But so I'm not saying this is going to happen, but from 2002 through to 2007, 2008, our all share index outperformed the US all share index by 350% in dollar terms.
That's quite an impressive number, isn't it?
It can do it.
Mm.
It can do it. People actually forget this. And I'm not saying it's going to do anything like that, but if I'm right, and once again, if our all share in dollar terms could be of the best, and other emerging markets could be of the best performing indices in the world.
Well, every dog has its day,
for
you know.
A very short, yeah, every, exactly. That's the exact point. You that phraseology is entirely correct, is that once every 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 years, the, you know, every dog does have its day, and maybe our day is coming up.
Well, I really hope so.
Must not forget to sell. You must not forget to sell.
You tell me that every week, Wayne.
Money overseas. Yeah. No, because what happens is we're in the depth of depression now. NVIDIA and the like, all those shares Shapiro loves, have absolutely shot the lights out for up until a week ago. And you just wanted money overseas in the Magnificent Seven because things were tough in the mining market. Things were tough in South Africa. So you don't want to buy any of those shares. And then all of a sudden, for 2 or 3 years, our share market outperforms everything and the rand strengthened. And all you hear is good news. You don't want to sell them because why must I sell them? You know, it's like when NVIDIA hits $130, $140. Why must I sell? You know, the next thing is $105. You know, so, well, yeah.
Selling is different.
Hopefully I will still be around.
Selling is more difficult.
When it comes to a selling top.
Selling is more difficult than buying, isn't it?
Selling is more difficult, yes.
It's far more difficult.
I'm not sure. I think they are equally as difficult because when you buy, you should be surrounded by depression. You should be just about to jump off the building because you are so depressed. Things are so terrible because that's the only time shares are cheap. Shares are never cheap when you're all feeling happy. And then when everything's happy and the market's going up and the economy is booming and all you hear is good news, it's equally difficult to sell that. So in other words, you've actually, in investments to be successful over time, you've got to do three things. You've got to always have a well-balanced, diversified portfolio. And then the second thing you do is every now and again, when the circumstances are right, you get rid of a little bit of cash, you sell a little bit of your growth shares and you buy the value shares like now. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing you do is when you're feeling, and that's when you're feeling depressed, you do that. And then the last thing you do is when you're feeling truly happy, you must sell all those shares that did well for you for the last 2 or 3 years. But not sell them all, just tilt your portfolio back into a bit of cash, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there's the three keys to investing. And if you stick to those three rules, you will be a reasonably successful investor your whole life.
Good advice. You're the sage. Now, tell me something, oh wise one. Crude oil's up 2%. Why is the S&P up 1.5%? Why are the US Treasury bonds yields going down? What has happened to make these market participants be so bullish? Because if I looked at the screen and see crude oil up 2%, I'd say, no, actually, the bond yields should be going up in the United States. The S&P should be flat ahead of the Fed decision. Tell me why, please.
Yeah. There may be some data that came out of the US that I just simply don't know about. So,
it might
just be anticipation of the rate of a possible rate cut.
Yeah, it could be data. Who knows? Market very sensitive to data, but I can't see it on CNBC.com, which is normally quite fast. And anyway. All right, but anyway, let's take it because the all share at an all-time record high, financials, and in particularly resources. I can't remember the last time I saw resources up over 4%. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, it has been a while. Yeah. Look, I mean, that's one of the problems with investing is you actually got to have your positions before the move happens because sometimes when that move happens, it's big and it's quicker. The market discounts good news and bad news very, very quickly.
Yeah, disseminates news very quickly. Exactly right.
And, very quickly.
And I don't think we know why the resources index on my screen delayed up 4.25%. It's a massive, massive move. Have your portfolio of resources done well, Wayne?
Yes.
Good. We'll leave it at that. I'm going to tell you a food story now, which will offend you. It'll offend your delicate sensibilities. Because it's all to do with vegetables. I've made a potato salad.
I like vegetables. I mean, I like potato chips.
As I said, this will offend you because it's to do with vegetables. I've made a potato salad, delicious boiled potatoes. It's called a Nicola potato, and I buy it from my local greengrocer just around the corner, little privately owned shop. I bought that. I boiled them up and mixed mayonnaise and mustard, chives, cress, parsley, and chopped onion. And I folded them all together so I've got my potato salad ready for later. I'm going to then roast aubergine, red peppers, and courgettes.
No, aubergine's lecker. Aubergine's fine. I don't mind aubergine at all.
And onion, a whole roasted onion in the skin so that when it's done, you just have to sort of squeeze it out. Actually, two shallots, not a whole onion.
Yes.
And also garlic.
Delicious,
and the same thing.
Yeah.
That is my vegetarian evening. And I know...
I must say. That sounds truly delicious. I mean... And a good potato salad with a bit of mustard in it is really nice. And I actually like aubergines. And I like, what's those other things that's got like thick leaves on it and you peel it off and you eat the heart of it?
Artichoke.
Cone shape. Artichoke. They're also absolutely delicious.
Oh, good.
Also with potato salad. I've actually got an anti food story to tell you.
Please tell me.
I hit the absolute rock bottom.
Oh, my goodness.
I cannot believe that I descended to these depths. I'm actually still deeply, deeply ashamed about it. The other night, the world's biggest rugby fan and I were watching a bit of television.
Mm.
And as per normal, after eating dinner, I felt like a chocolate.
But tell me, God, before you go on, aren't the chocolates your partner, the world's biggest rugby fan, doesn't she hide them away from you?
She does. No, we have chocolates for general consumption.
Okay.
But that's exactly the point of the story. She's got the secret stash that's kept in the forbidden zone.
Devious woman.
That I'm not allowed to enter on pains of death.
Mm.
And I went and looked in the normal places and there were no chocolates. And I scratched in the cupboard and there were no chocolates.
Right.
And then I went and pleaded with the world's biggest rugby fan as to, can I please go into the forbidden zone to look for chocolate?
That's
and
a big,
she relented.
It's a very big transition.
She relented. I mean, it must have truly, truly been a statement of understanding my desperation that you let me into the forbidden zone. So I entered. Mm. The forbidden zone. And there's two big, I don't know, like, I don't know, 4-liter glass jars with lids on that has the chocolates in the forbidden zone.
What sort of chocolates, though? Are they wrapped chocolates like mini Kit Kats or something? What are they?
No, that has that sometimes. But this time around, the only chocolate I could find that I could actually eat was a bar one. I hate all that. But I was so desperate, I cannot believe I did it.
Was it wrapped up, obviously?
I descended to the absolute bottom and I ate a ball one.
What time of night was this?
About 8:30, 8:45, somewhere around there.
Just before bedtime.
Yeah. I actually couldn't believe that I descended to such depth and ate a ball one because there was nothing else.
Okay, it was delicious, probably in the short term. But
no,
did you suffer?
The toffee stuck to my teeth, and it was absolutely awful. But I ate it.
Okay, now the eating it is one thing, and getting it stuck to your dentures is another thing. But during the night, did you wake up because your body rejected it and you couldn't digest it?
My body was fine. I got one of these bodies that can digest just about anything. unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know which one it is, either a blessing or a curse.
Yeah.
No, but I woke up because I felt so depressed that I descended to such depths, to such lows, that I actually ate a bar one. It mentally plagued me.
But why was the bar one there anyway? If you know that it's going to cause you such great concern, she likes bar ones.
She likes bar ones and her friends like bar ones. And I mean, I suppose most people like bar ones.
Well, I don't know.
But she knew if she bought bar ones and put them in the forbidden zone, even when I went, if I went in there without permission, they would still be safe.
Yeah.
Because I didn't eat bar ones. So she always knew if they're bar ones, and I sneaked into the forbidden zone without her knowledge, that the bar ones would be safe.
Ah, you see, you know what you've done, Wayne? You've broken the covenant of the forbidden confectionery. That's what you've done.
I know. No, but I'll never do it again. I regret that incident. I'm trying to wipe it out of my memory bank,
please.
But it comes back and haunts me that I descended to such lows that I ate a bar one.
I'm not judging you at all.
In fact, I ate two of them. Admittedly, they were small, but I ate two of them.
Listen, all you can do now is expunge it from your mind and say that
I'm trying my very best. It was
a moment of weakness, Wayne.
For whatever reason, on my Google News feed, I get all of these five things to improve your mental health, what you must do to stay happy in retirement, you know, how to lift your spirit, you know, 10 things you must do today to lift your – I don't know why I get this on my news feed, but I do. But the one thing I got today is how to cope with depression and sorrow. And that you've got to share with other people.
You're sharing it with me and lots of other people now.
Everyone about how low I went on my bar one thing, it'll help me better to cope with it.
Please don't beat yourself up. It'll pass. My personal analysis would be this. Get a bar one ice cream, which you can buy. And that's you go from the normal bar one, which is disgusting. It used to be called a Mars bar in the United Kingdom. But there's a bar one ice cream, I think, in the Republic of South Africa. Have one of those.
Yep.
And you could just sort of wean yourself off it by getting the ice cream. That's my tip.
No, I'm trying to steer away from bar ones now. I never thought I would do that. I mean, I haven't eaten a bar one since I was about probably 10 years old, if not a bit younger than that. So that's a good 50, 55, however many years ago now. So for 55 years, I've said I don't like bar ones because the toffee sticks to your teeth and I haven't chowed it. And then I was so desperate, I just did it.
Okay.
But there, I've got it out now. I've got it out there. No,
well
out
done.
Now.
No, it's good. It's like one of those Alcoholics Anonymous sessions where you all sit in the corner
and say,
I'm Wayne McCurry.
Yeah.
And I've had a bar one.
Hi, my name's Wayne. I ate a bar one.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you've done very well.
I don't know if there's a bar one anonymous society.
Oh, there must be.
But Shapiro's got the same problems.
With what?
He absolutely craves a New York bagel when he goes to New York with smoked salmon on it and capers. But in Shapiro's mind, it's outrageously expensive.
Yeah, it's $8
or
something.
So he resists it and he resists it. He resists it and he resists it, but every time he goes to New York, he has one.
Yeah, like he can't afford it. I mean, come on now. He could open his own bagel stall on every corner of New York. But anyway, Wayne, I'm very proud of you for opening up to us, and we'll revisit your progress in programs to come. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager or something at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.